Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk, and we're talking today to New York Times author C.J. Box. He's his new book is called Breaking Point, and it's going to debut at number 5 actually in the New York Times in a week or two. And he's here to talk about it. It's number 13. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you. You got a blurb here from Lee Child. How wonderful is that?
That's great. Yeah. Well, in fact, I think I'll see him in New York. He's kind of turned into a friend.
Well, tell him to let me interview him, because I've wanted to interview him for a while and haven't been able to. You won't remember. By the time you see him, you'll be like, what did he say to me? David, who? I guess one of the first questions I want to ask you, and this is an interesting question right off the bat, why are you not wearing your hat on your book?
We just wanted to, actually the publishers asked that we do some photos without the hat, just to, I guess, prove that I'm not always a cowboy, that I write, you know, mystery thrillers.
Interesting.
You know, so some have the hat, some don't.
Breaking Point, this is a terrific, terrific book. And I don't say that lightly, because I read a lot of mysteries, and I know I know good ones when I read. Do you like calling it a mystery, or would you prefer calling it an adventure thriller, or thriller, or what?
You know, yeah, that's always kind of a conundrum for me. You know, in my mind, I'm kind of writing contemporary Western novels about, you know, different issues, and they have a mystery and or thriller propulsion behind them, but I never give it a lot of thought which one it is.
Yeah, I mean, your publisher doesn't push you one way or the other. They don't say, well, it's got to be more mystery, or it's got to be more thriller, or it's got to be more...
No, not at all. They're very encouraging with all the books and whichever direction they go.
Now, is number 5 the highest you've ever gotten in the New York Times, or have you gotten higher than that?
Actually, last book, Force of Nature, debuted at number 3.
Wow.
But it's an odd thing with the list, and that the new book has much, much higher sales than the last book, but I guess the other books that are on it, on the list, just make it come out a little bit lower in the debut.
Well, it's amazing. You've become so popular. I mean, I know you have 13 books out, and from the very first time I read Open Season, the first one, I was in love with the series. I mean,
Well, thanks.
And number one, I've asked people about what they thought of Open Season, and I've got a lot of different responses about it, but I thought it was terrific. I absolutely never doubted that it was terrific. It's amazing.
I appreciate that.
It's amazing how you get a group together and everybody won't agree on it.
Oh, sure.
And you know that as an author. You know that you're not going to get everybody in the whole world liking your book.
No, I think that would be, it would be odd if that happened, because, you know, the books are very much set in a specific place with a specific sense of, you know, place and point of view and outlook on life, and that part of the West is kind of exotic to some readers, which makes them either excited about it or maybe not, you know, kind of turned off by that kind of outdoor kind of story.
All right, here's a question. Who's older, you or Joe Pickett?
I am.
I wasn't sure what the answer was, really.
Yeah, in the books he's about kind of in his mid-40s, and I'm a little older than that.
Does that make you self-conscious at all?
I never even thought about it before. I guess that in a way it's kind of better, because I can write with experience of what he's going through and not being anticipating what it might be.
Now, and who has more children?
Actually, I have 3 girls, and in the book, Joe Pickett has 2 daughters and then 1 ward, also female, so he's got 3 girls as well.
So you wanted that third girl to even the thing up, didn't you?
Well, I know a little bit about that. I know what that's like, so I can kind of write from experience.
That's one of the more moving things about, this particular book, because it's mentioned about the ward and about how Mary Beth is doing with her. It really moved me when, you know, I was reading about that. You're very good with story. You're so good with story.
And thank you.
The problem with story is it can easily become boring. Very easily. And believe me, I've read a lot of mysteries. I know what boring is, and it can happen so easily. And yet you're so good at making sure it doesn't become that way.
Well, thanks. I'm a reader too, and I know exactly what you're talking about. And you know, I've read some you know, very popular best-selling authors where I start to drift. Usually, it's in the middle third of the books, and I'm conscious of that and try not to do that.
Exactly. Now, are you? This is a strange question, I guess, but are you taking on the EPA in this book, or?
Well, you know what it is. You know, I'm kind of exposing something because the premise of the book is based on an actual case that happened in Idaho. It's called the Sackett case, and what happened was about 6 years ago, a young couple in the panhandle of Idaho bought a small plot of land in a subdivision with houses on all four sides, and when they began to move the dirt to build a foundation, three EPA employees flew all the way up from Boise, 8 hours away, and told them to stop, that they were building in wetlands, and all they gave them was a business card, and then they left, and then told them that until they restored the ground to the satisfaction of the EPA, this couple would be fined $75,000 a day.
So that figure is almost true, the figure in the book.
Exactly. The premise of it is based on the Sackett case. Of course, I take a lot of liberties and fictionalize it, and make it more crimes and murders. But the case with the battle with the EPA is very much based on real events. And this couple couldn't get a hearing with the EPA. They were just being fined, and finally they were represented by a public interest law firm, and the EPA fought them all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the court then threw out the EPA's case and ruled in favor of the Sacketts 9-0 that they'd been mistreated. And it was one of the most outrageous things I'd ever heard, because you kind of expect the EPA to, enforce the clean water and air laws against, large corporations and polluters, but you don't think about them going after a young couple that can't scrape together enough money for a lawyer.
Right. Now, is it almost 50% of the land in Wyoming is held by the government?
That's right. In the western states, it ranges from 30%. I think I may have this wrong, but I think Nevada is almost like 70 or 80%.
Wow.
Owned by the U.S. government.
It blows the mind. It's amazing what we don't realize in our lives.
And, well, I think that, and it has a lot to do with the outlook of people in the Mountain West, and that, they're interacting with federal government employees every single day, and that's not the case everywhere else.
I like in your books that the books don't necessarily always have a happy ending. There's not always a pat ending where everybody's happy and everybody's smiling and the lovers walk off in the sunset, and there's something unresolved in your books at the end.
Yeah, well, I think that in a lot of times reflects reality more than the completely tied up ending, and I like that. I like to read those kind of endings, and some of them certainly do kind of just wrap up neatly, but in most cases there's a couple of threads hanging. As there are in real life.
You must have watched that show, what was it, Quincy, in the 80s, where every one of his shows had a weird ending. It would suddenly stop in the middle of the... I mean, you thought it was going to have a happy ending, and it didn't always.
Well, I'm familiar with it. I can't remember if I ever watched it or not.
But he had that same kind of... Chris, his was a series, too, but he had that same kind of... Sometimes the ending would be like, no, why did it end that way? Makes you think. I like endings that make you think. What's going to happen in the next book, and make you want to read now I can't wait to read book 14 to see what's going to happen.
Well, luckily I've got it started, so it takes Joe in a little bit different direction, but I like to do that too.
Yeah, and I think after 13 books, maybe it is time to take them a little bit. Did your readers suggest that to you, or is that something you just decided on?
Well, that's just kind of something I've decided on because I have learned from readers, during the book tours and traveling around, that they do seem to kind of enjoy the unpredictability of the series, that it keeps it fresh and keeps them wanting the next book, because the books are not they're not in some kind of pat formula like some series, and I think they like that the changes, they like the fact that the family gets older every year, that happens in real time, and it keeps it fresh for me as the writer, too.
I think Joe Pickett is so interesting because he's almost, I mean, I want to use the term rogue, but I don't know that rogue is the proper term. Rogue in that he never seems to let his wife know where he is. So he gets himself into these situations where he can't always call or he can't always let her know where he is. And, you know, I kind of get annoyed with him for that. But at the same time, I understand that that's the way he is.
That's the way he is, and there's you know, kind of unique circumstances in the real remote places in Wyoming where he tends to be, and that a lot of times there's simply no cell signal for, you know, until he can get to a place, and that's kind of the unfortunate reality where I live, is that there are still a lot of places like that where you can be completely out of touch.
Right.
And he tends to be in the more, you know, remote areas.
Well, your wife, I think her name's Lori, right?
My wife what?
Is your wife's name Lori?
Yes, it's
okay.
Lori, yeah.
I know that because you mentioned her in the back of the book. It's amazing
right.
What we can find out about you by the credits in your books.
That's right.
I always look at those and I think, ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah, she's my first reader, as well as two of my daughters.
Why do you like writing the Joe Pickett series? I mean, you've written 13 of them. You obviously enjoy them immensely. What do you get out of them? What do they bring you to your life?
You know, for me, they're a reflection of the real world in a certain place in a certain time, and that's what I like. Just like I like to read books that are very grounded in a certain place, so that when you put the book down, you feel like you've been there, that you know a little bit more about those people that live there and how they think and why they think it. And when I was growing up in Wyoming and in the Mountain West, I kept looking for books that sort of reflected more the life, the world that as I saw it, and couldn't find them. There weren't very many. There's only 600,000 people in the state.
So you thought you would write
them. There weren't many writers that reflected it, and I always wanted to be able to do that.
I apologize. I always step on authors' words. I don't know why I do that. I have, and when I have thoughts, I have to say them. I don't know. I think as I get older, I have to be more like that. But I always think the author must think I'm so rude when I do.
No.
Sometimes, I mean, I know I'm just one of those people who have to speak their mind when it comes to them, you know. Now, I like you, and I also like Craig Johnson. You guys are I mean, you write this not really the same kind of books, but you're in the same setting, but
right.
But and you're both wonderful people. I've met you both, and I mean, do you read his books? And
I read the first one. I haven't kept up, but I read the first one.
I've read all 9 of them, actually, and I actually have met him on numerous occasions. It's just a terrific, terrific guy. And I don't say that lightly either, because I've met some people that were less than spectacular in my life, not necessarily authors.
Yeah, and it is kind of amazing now that there are quite a few authors who are from Wyoming or write about Wyoming, and that's kind of a new development.
Right, but his are much slower paced. His novels,
right.
I mean, in my mind, his are slower. They don't the story happens, but it unfolds. Whereas yours are more everything's happening in every chapter. I mean, there's something progressing the story in every chapter.
I like to move things along, yes.
But it makes sense. It's not that it doesn't make any sense. You know, here's the thing I have with some successful authors. They use a lot of exclamation points. Have you ever noticed that?
On a few, yes.
And I won't name any names, but I've seen it. And I can't figure out why it annoys me so much, but it does. And I think it takes away from the story.
Well, that kind of goes back to the Elmore Leonard's 10 rules of writing, and one of them is do not use exclamation points.
Is that one of his rules?
Yeah.
How about that? Because I'm absolutely, in fact, I was up late last night watching Justified, getting caught up with that series Justified.
Great series.
Which just blows my mind with the violence blows my mind more than anything. Yeah. That there could be people that are, I mean, have you met people in your lifetime that are like that? Criminals?
Well, not that violent, no, but I do understand kind of the subculture where everybody is armed. I mean, that reflects some real places.
Now, in the beginning of this book, there's two EPA agents who were, well, something happens to them. I don't know if you want to give away what exactly happens to them, but...
Well, they get murdered.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. I didn't know if I was going too far by saying that.
No.
But it's very interesting the way you start the story off. We're like, well, who are these two people? And neither one of them are Joe Pickett. So what's going on? Are we sure this is a Joe Pickett novel?
Yeah. And then it's, you know, got a very, very sudden wild ending. And then, yeah, then Joe Pickett is kind of introduced sort of laconically doing his job.
Right. And the third agent, that's interesting. I mean, I'm not even sure who what's his name, Love? His last name's Love. I'm not sure who he exactly was, but because I thought we were going to see more of him in the story.
Well, he does reappear just basically to say, you know, sorry, I didn't follow through. But I wanted to have a an agent who was very troubled by what the other two were doing as part of their job, mainly just to say that, you know, not everybody in a federal agency is so dedicated to doing something that's obviously not really fair.
So there's a point to every one of your characters.
I try to do that. I always try to think. I don't want characters introduced simply for the sake of the book, but have people that with real, you know, motivations and agendas who happen to be in the book.
Now, I want to warn anybody that this is a book you don't want to spoil for anybody, because there's such a spectacular ending to this book, and I would hate to have it ruined for anybody. So we can't even talk about the ending. As much as I would love to talk about the ending, I can't mention it. I don't know if the Sackett case has any clues as to the ending of the book, because I don't know the whole details about the Sackett case. But don't read anything before you read this book, is what I would suggest.
I think that's a good suggestion.
There are certain books you read and you know that I can never spoil this for anybody, because it would really be a shock and people would really be upset. And in all the years I've done these interviews, as far as I know, I've never spoiled a book for anybody.
Good for you. That's great.
But it's very hard, because the endings are sometimes the most fun thing to talk about the book.
Right.
When you sit down to write a book, now you've done 13 of these, you're working on 14 now.
Right.
So you're almost done. I don't know how far you are from being done on 14, but so you've almost done all 14 by now. But
I'm about first third done in the next
first third. And by the way, that the standalone that's coming out, is that coming out later in the year?
It's going to come out July 30th.
Oh really, July? Highway. That's not too far away.
No, it isn't.
I want to read that.
It's a wild one. It's got the character of Cody Hoyt, who is introduced in 3 weeks to Say Goodbye, and then in Back of Beyond last year, and he's a sheriff's department detective in Montana, and in this case he's up against a serial killer long haul truck driver.
Oh,
and
wow!
I really got involved in that truck driving world in order to render the background realistic.
And why am I suddenly thinking of Stephen King when you describe that?
No, I don't know. There's no supernatural element. But it's very scary.
But just the fact that I think to myself, boy, what you could do with a serial killer driver.
Yeah, who's constantly on the move.
And now I'm thinking of, do I know any of those kind of people?
Well, the FBI estimates there's probably just about 10 to 12 of them out there, but that they've disappeared 500 to 700 truck stop prostitutes around the country.
Wow, that's
scary. Only one has been found.
Wow. You know, there's a very interesting story. If you ever meet J.A. Janeth?
Yes, yeah.
She was actually picked up by a serial killer, and the serial killer determined to kill her.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a very, ask her about it next time you see her. It's a very interesting story. Of course, it didn't happen because she's still writing books. But
wow.
Can you imagine a serial killer picking you up and they determine they're going to kill you?
No.
And you know, the horror of that, you can never really realize the full horror of that until you're in that situation. But she describes it, and it's fascinating. Absolutely.
Wow, no, I've not heard that story.
But, I mean, I wanted to say that as a little aside because I figured you hadn't. It's not probably not a story she tells everybody, but she did tell me one time. And it has stayed with me since that day.
I bet.
But I think I got off my point. My point was, when you start writing these stories, do you look for things that have happened in the past that really happened and try to incorporate them into a Joe Pickett book? Or does something come out of your head? Or how does this work?
Well, both, actually, I think. Because I write about, I always start with either the issue or the controversy or, you know, some kind of burning question that people are talking about in the West. I start with that and then do the research on it and then try to figure out a way to, in effect, pull the reader through that issue in a compelling way. So some are based on, you know, I don't like the idea of, like, ripped from the headlines kind of books.
Right, like Law and Order does.
Based on real events, and this one, this Breaking Point certainly is.
Like Law and Order is notorious for doing that.
Right.
A real life and make it, and since they almost sensationalize it, I think, to a certain extent.
I think so, too.
And I don't necessarily like that, but... Well, maybe that's why I never liked Law and Order all that much. I don't know. But I'm not here to bash TV programs necessarily. But I think that's interesting. But you must have a very organized mind because your books are always organized so well. I mean, they're never – you never get to the point where, you know, what's the point of this? Why is he doing this? Because you kind of
– Good. Thank you.
And also, in my mind, I can see a lot of the scenes that happen in this book in my head. You know, that whole adventure with Joe Pickett and – Well, I won't say who it is, but Joe Pickett's adventure toward the end of the book is so indelible in my head.
Good, yeah, I love to write as visually as possible, and those kind of we're you know, not revealing anything, but those kind of adventures are things that luckily I do get to do and try to do so that I can write about them in a realistic way.
And then something suddenly happens at one point that was totally unexpected, which I also enjoy because that's the way life is. Life is very unexpected.
Right. I love to be able to do that from time to time and just have something happen that hasn't been set up that does make sense in context, but it's surprising when it happens.
Right, and I see those scenes in my head, and I think you know what scenes I'm talking about. There's two in particular that stand out in my head.
Yeah.
And also,
I do.
The guy that's laying in the bottom of the, well, I won't. What he says is just so amazing. It's almost funny and scary at the same time.
Right. I love it when you can do that. I love to read those kind of things.
That's amazing. But the thing is, with you, you're so good at what you do that you make everything seem totally normal. I never get to the point where in your books where I say, well, that's totally preposterous. That would never happen.
Usually, what I find when someone questions something in the books or just says it's way too over the top, it's usually the part that's based on a real incident. And that always just always gets me when I hear that. And, you know, it's no excuse to say, well, but it really happened, because if you didn't buy it, you didn't buy it. But that's usually the case.
Now, I should mention, I don't think I mentioned that this book's out from Putnam. It's in hardcover from Putnam.
Right.
I don't know if I mentioned Putnam or not. How do readers react when you have two different series like that? Now, you say this other, The Highwayman, is part of another series. How do your readers react to that?
It's interesting. Some read all of the books. I've met people who have only read the standalones, and others who have only read the series. What I kind of find is that the standalones, in a lot of ways, kind of turn into a gateway drug into the series. Mm. Because it's kind of intimidating for someone to look at 13 books and think, oh, geez, I don't know if I want to start that, but I will read this other one and see if I like the... you know, the style and the characters, and if they do, then they generally start reading the series.
You know, that's a point that I've had, and I've sold books in a bookstore, when somebody will say to me, well, what's the first in the series? And then I have to tell them there's 12 before that. And then they suddenly get this look on their face like, oh, 12?
That's a huge commitment.
It is. They're going to love the commitment, though, because this is such a great series. I mean, it really, truly is. I'm still picturing in my mind the end of this book. You know, and that's what's the beauty of a writer, when you can picture the scenes in your mind. You know, and there are books where you read and you're like, oh, okay, maybe I enjoyed the story, but I don't see the characters in my head. I don't see the action happening. I don't see it. But I see that all in your books.
Thank you. Great.
And, you know, and I know it can't be easy. I mean, when you sit down, when you first start a book, say when you're going to sit down and write book 15, what goes through your mind? Are you scared that you're not going to think of an idea? Are you scared you won't be able to complete the book?
Usually by the time I start writing, I've got a pretty good idea of where it's headed, because I do a very long outline and do the research that I need to before I start. But there have been times when I go back and cut down the beginning drastically, because I realize I've been writing it more for myself to put myself there than for the reader. And I think it's one of the harder things for a writer is to realize that start the book where the book starts, you know, not build the house and describe everything in it before the action begins.
And also, with 13 books, you have to. There's got to be some kind of danger of repeating yourself as far as language, as far as style of writing. Using the same phrases over and over again. Do you ever come across that?
Sure, and that's kind of a fine line. I think there are certain phrases that I use through the books that I know I want to keep using, and that readers like and use, and are reference. Like, you know, when the situation starts to turn pretty sour, you know, someone will often, Joe Pickett usually will often say, you know, things are starting to get Western, or you know, don't let things get Western. Those kind of things I like to use, because that goes back to the very first book. But other ones, certainly I don't like to repeat myself and with certain phrases or descriptions.
Right, exactly. And I often wonder how authors do that, because they make it look so easy. And I think, wow, how do they do that? How do they write? I mean, how does Elizabeth George write a 700-page book and make it seem so realistic and so real and different writer? And you think, it's amazing what a true artist can do. And writing a book, you have to be very artistic to write a book. Not anybody can just sit down and write a book.
Well, I think anybody can write one, but it may not be interesting.
Right. I think that was what I intended when I said that. But it, like I said before, it goes back to what I said before. It's so easy to write a boring book.
Mm-hmm.
And write a book that doesn't grab your attention, you know. And I find, even more so than what you found, I mean, you get to halfway through, you said, and sometimes that's when it slows down. For me, a lot of times it's in the beginning.
Well, I think why that happens is because the writer is feeling their own way around, writing it for themselves to establish the scene or the characters or the rhythm, not really realizing that, you know, the reader isn't that interested in the writer's inner workings. They're just interested in the story.
And that when you say that, it makes me think of James Lee Burke right away, because a lot of people say he's so descriptive. I get so tired of his descriptions, and yet he's considered an all-time classic. I mean, he's a monster.
I'm a fan. I'm a big fan.
But I mean, but apparently he describes every blade of grass. Now, I've not read one of his books. I have to admit, although I should at some point. But you don't do that. You're very good with describing, but not over describing.
That's the one part where I often go back and cut a little bit out when I'm setting a scene, because I do write a lot about, you know, a lot of kind of nature and vistas, that kind of thing, where I'll write it and then go back and cut it out. And again, that kind of goes back to the Elmore Leonard rules I mentioned earlier, where he wrote one that said, leave out the parts readers skip.
Right.
And it is so simple, but it makes perfect sense.
Exactly. I mean, there's so much with writing. I mean, and the more I read, the more I realize how talented there are, how many really talented writers there are out there. I mean, and you make a name for yourself. I mean, people like John Grisham, you make a name for yourself. It's very easy to just, you know, to tell a really good story. I mean, his short story book that came out a few years ago was fantastic. Absolutely.
I've not read it, but I've heard that.
It was just, there's something about those stories that just totally grabbed me. And when I saw him in D.C. before I read the book, he just grabbed me with what he was saying about the stories, and I got the book after it came out. It was weeks later, but they were just wonderful. I mean,
I'm going to have an anthology of short stories coming out next year as well.
Oh, really?
It's so hard to, stories that appeared in other anthologies or here and there that readers have expressed interest that they'd love to see put together because they can't find them. And so we're finally going to do that.
Now, I know we're almost out of time here, but I need to ask you about titles. How do you come across titles? Do you think of them after you're done the story, during the story, or before the story?
Actually, in different cases, all three. And sometimes I've titled a book that, and it'll get to the publisher, and they'll say, "Geez, we you know showed it to our salespeople, and they just don't like that title." Or sometimes it's so similar to another title that the publisher is printing. Different reasons, different things, but probably about 2-3 quarters of them have been my titles that have kind of, they usually pop up during, sometime during the book, but sometimes I start with one.
Right. Now, do you have a title for book 14 yet?
At this point, it's called Stone Cold. It may change.
Stone Cold. Isn't cold in another one of your titles?
I've got one called Cold Wind. About wind energy.
What, now, will the publisher say that? Well, you already used the word cold. You can't use it again. Would they say that to you?
No, at this point, they like it. But it, like I said, it may change. It's early.
Huh, Stone Cold, yeah. Or they may say, well, it sounds like it's part of the Jesse Stone series from Robert Parker.
Yeah, I kind of thought about that.
I'm not saying I object to it. I think it's a good title. I have no problem with the title at all. Sometimes a writer will say a title to me, and I'm like, you know, and I don't really like the title, but I don't actually tell them that.
Well, and you know, and again, I kind of battle that one through the entire book, and it could change.
Right, exactly. Well, I think we have to let you go because you're doing all the interviews all morning. But it's been an absolute pleasure, CJ. And
for me too. Thank you.
And then you have a great voice too.
Oh, geez, I feel kind of logy this morning. But
no,
thank you.
You're coming across, you have a really deep voice, which I really like, because then everybody can hear it real nice. The book, again, is called Breaking Point. It's number 13 in the Joe Pickett series. It's out from Putnam and all your bookstores and e-books, and I'm sure it's on audio, too, right?
Yes, it is.
What is your real first name, by the way?
Charles.
It is Charles.
Charles
James. Well, now everybody knows.
Yeah, don't try to keep it as... I used to write, when I worked for a newspaper, I wrote under Chuck Box. And then I found out that that the chuck box is on the back of a chuck wagon. That's where they keep the utensils. And it was a little community in Wyoming, and then some of the ranchers thought it was like a clever Western pseudonym. And
right. I don't know if you remember.
24 years old at the time, and right. It made me mad, so I started writing under.
Right. I don't know if you remember this, but we met at a VoucherCon, I think in Vegas.
Oh, wow. I think that was the first one I ever went to.
Yeah. It was such a pleasure to finally meet you. After reading your books, you know, it's such a thrill for a reader to meet the author. This is somebody who they've read and enjoyed. You know, that's such a thrill for a reader.
Well, and I enjoy meeting readers.
I remember we were in this little room. It was this room way off to the side, and I can't remember who you were sitting with, but I it's funny how I can remember first meeting you.
Was it in a bar?
No. It was just a little room off the side somewhere. They must have had some kind of hallway where they had these other rooms where they were having panels. You were having a panel. I don't even remember what the panel was about. I only remember you. I don't know why.
Thank you.
And you were so nice to talk to me afterwards. And you never know how an author is going to be. When you approach an author, you think, oh, please let them be nice. And
that's how I feel too.
You don't want them to be mean. Well, anyway, we need to let you go. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you later.